Well, greetings to all of you. I really appreciated that first sermon, very clear and enlightening and inspiring. And I'm one of the ones going to St. George. I'll be with my son, Danny, and his wife and her family. So looking forward to it. Hope everybody can stay in good health and we can have a wonderful time. Yes, today is considered Patriot Day. Ever since the terrorist attacks 20 years ago on the 9/11, and right after that, there was a lot of patriotism. It's too bad that there's not near as much patriotism now as there was then, but I'm glad we do call this Patriot Day. The title is Patriot Day, 9/11, and God's Blessings on America. Now, with all the bad news we're hearing right now, you might think, well, it seems kind of odd to be talking about blessings. But I do want to emphasize how that God has blessed us so much and continues to and will bless us in unimaginable ways in the future. One of the ways he blesses us is that things could be worse. As much bad news as we hear, things could be a whole lot worse, and I'll remind you of that later on. I want to encourage you, of course, always to be reading our church literature, including this latest Beyond Today magazine. And this talks about, in three articles, it talks about 9/11. So that certainly will be good to read at this particular time. I'll as a sort of a side point, I just want to mention that of course, among all the other types of bad news, we're thinking a lot about Afghanistan right now, and I just want to say I personally think it was a mistake to pull out completely, because having a military base doesn't mean you're at war. Necessarily. I mean, we were giving backup and air support and so forth to the Afghan army, but I just want to remind you that we have a lot of bases around the world. We have a lot of bases in Germany and England and South Vietnam and so forth. And so it's a mistake to say that just because you have a military base that you're waging war there. Yes, God has blessed us. One of the most inspiring things to me to read about and learn about has been how God, down through history, has performed all kinds of miracles. Of course, the Bible is full of miracles of God doing amazing things for his people and delivering them, protecting them, giving many kinds of miracles. And then when you read the history of the wars that we've been in, well, first of all, the history of how the United States came to be an independent, prosperous, free, the freest country ever. The whole process of God blessing Ephraim and Manasseh and bringing about the United States of America involved many miracles from God. And when you read the history of our major wars like World War I and World War II, it seems obvious that God has given many, many miracles to cause us to be successful in battles and ultimately to win those wars. So it was certainly a major shock back 20 years ago. I, along with probably all of you, think that God allows things like that sometimes as a wake-up call. It did seem to be a wake-up call at first as people became more patriotic, people started going back to church, people started becoming more religious. But that did not last very long, sadly to say. It's kind of like we've quickly got back to what's considered normal. And as we enter this end time, of course, part of the reason for so many bad things is that God restrains Satan, but he's restraining him less. In other words, he's loosening the leash on Satan, and that's one way God has of punishing a country. And people who turn away from God is to allow more bad things to happen, including to be affected by Satan the devil. You know, over 20 years ago, the plotters of that terrorist attack diabolically chose four planes that were scheduled to fly from the East Coast to the West Coast so that each plane would be full of fuel, lots of fuel. And so, as the our latest magazine tells us, they were planning to use like 20 planes, but they had to rush up their plans. And so we can be thankful that that did happen, that it was cut down to just four planes, because things could have been, of course, a lot worse. We see a lot of parallels between that and what happened at Pearl Harbor, but that did sort of in some ways, has worked together for good for a while, just like Pearl Harbor, in a sense, worked together for good for a while. But certainly, we did not learn the lessons we should have long term. As I mentioned on the Feast of Trumpets, it just really dawns on me, because I've always wondered, what is going to trigger the rise of a European power that the Bible calls the beast? Well, up until now, our allies around the world have looked upon us as being the policemen, and that they don't have to be very strong because they can just rely upon the United States to protect them and so forth. Well, now there's going to be less and less confidence in the United States being the protector. I've got with me here three articles that I wrote. One article was for, back at that time we had the Virtual Christian Magazine, and I was writing articles for that. And then, so the very first anniversary in 2002, I wrote an article for that. And so I'm doing something kind of unusual today. I'm partly reading from my previous articles, because you'll find a lot of these facts interesting. And then 10 years later, in 2011, I wrote two articles. I think they just went on our church website. I just thought it was since this is such an unusual time, the 20-year anniversary of that, to bring up how that God did keep it from being a lot worse than what it was. I'll read one sentence that is in my article, and I don't know if I thought of this sentence or whether I heard it somewhere else and I just included it. But I said, this humanistic world relies heavily on email and technology rather than knee mail and theology. So that I probably didn't think of that. I probably just copied that from somewhere else that I heard that. The prophecy there in the Old Testament says that one way that God is going to punish Israel in the future is we lose the pride of our power. We still have a lot of military power and financial power and so forth. But when you lose the pride of your power, it's like you don't know where to use it and how to use it, and you don't have the will to use it and the courage to use it and so forth. You know, our Pledge of Allegiance says that this is a nation under God. Well, it was quite a bit for a while, but it's been less and less under God, in a sense, ever since the founding of this country. I just want to read some interesting things here about how things could have been worse. Had the jetliners crashed into the lower portion of the Twin Towers, the buildings would have fallen sooner, and many more persons in the buildings and on the ground would have been trapped and killed. And the buildings may have toppled like falling trees, destroying many other important buildings. A domino effect of falling buildings could have resulted in the loss of life of hundreds of thousands. So you remember, both towers just fell straight down. And so we realized that if the planes had hit low in the buildings, they might have just fallen over like falling trees. The hijackers of the Other two planes may have intended to fly those planes into the U.S. Capitol and the White House. Both houses of Congress were in session on that day, and surprise attacks could have wiped out much of the executive and legislative leadership of the United States. Regarding American Airlines 77 that hit the Pentagon, it could have been much worse. Had the plane's trajectory been a little higher, it could have hit the inside rings on the opposite side of the Pentagon, where are located the offices of the Secretary of Defense, Joint Chiefs of Staff, and many other high-ranking military officials. With one blow, the world's most powerful military could have lost its top leaders. As it was, the plane smashed into a recently remodeled and reinforced section that was not even yet fully occupied. That kept the death toll from being much higher. The fourth plane, United Airlines 93, that, as you know, crashed in Pennsylvania, it was delayed in departure for 41 minutes from Logan Airport in Boston. That delay made it possible for the passengers to receive these cell phone calls to learn what happened with the other planes and made them realize why their plane had been hijacked. And so, of course, they revolted. The one that kind of led the way said that when the time came, he said, okay, let's roll. Very courageous and inspiring story. Thankfully, at the time of the attacks, many who worked in the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center had not arrived at their jobs, whereas about 22,000 employees worked in each tower. It is estimated that less than 10,000 were in each tower at the time of impact. So a maximum of 22,000 in each tower, but only about 10,000 were in each one of those buildings. Remarkably, both the number of employees who decided they could not go to work that day and the number of employees who were delayed or running late in getting to work were unusually high. In the days and weeks that followed 9/11, we heard many stories of all kinds of strange circumstances that kept employees from getting to work or getting to work on time. We wonder how many of those circumstances were orchestrated by God. Now, I'm going to give you some numbers, and it's hard, you know, if you're just listening audibly to numbers, it's hard to kind of comprehend. So I've got some visual aids here to show you what a low occupancy of those four planes had that day. Here are the numbers. This is, if you can, hope you can read this. This is American Airlines 11, which hit the North Tower. That Boeing 767 had a capacity of 351 passengers. Only 92 were on board. The United Airlines 175, another Boeing 767, which hit the South Tower, it also, of course, had a capacity of 351, and only 65 were on the plane. The American Airlines 77, which was a Boeing 757 that hit the Pentagon, it had a capacity of 289, and only 64 were on it. United Airlines 93, the one that crashed in Pennsylvania, of course, the same kind of plane, so it had a capacity of 289, and only 45 were on the plane. That means that if you think of the capacity of all four planes together, there could have been 1,280 people on those planes, but it was just 266. So I think God probably worked that out too. It's just it's awesome to think of how sparsely occupied those planes were that day. The terrorists had their big opportunity for surprise attacks when the United States was lax in security and preparedness. In hindsight, we can imagine many scenarios with much greater destruction and loss of life. We can be thankful not only that they did not hit the Capitol or the White House, but also that they did not detonate nuclear bombs or blow up nuclear plants or spread massive biological infection or cripple our communications capabilities. The terrorists may have been so determined to humiliate America, you know, by striking at our symbols of what we're so proud about, that they were focused so much on humiliating America that they failed to ignore more strategic targets. And so there's a lot of parallels with the bombing of the attack on Pearl Harbor. The Japanese had hoped to destroy all of our aircraft carriers, but it just so happens that the aircraft carriers were away out at sea, and they became immediately very valuable for the war effort. So you see, God has been very merciful. I mean, even when you think about terrible things, we have to realize that things could have been much worse. Many times, things could have been much worse than what they were. And maybe after Jesus returns to earth, he might tell us a lot of things that he and the Father did that we did not know about or know for sure. That's going to be so interesting to learn things that we wonder about at that time. I think of questions all the time, like, I can't wait to ask Jesus Christ this and that. So I'm sure you think how interesting that is, all that the bad things that could have happened, and how things could have been worse. And even now, there are so many vulnerabilities. I mean, we're trying to exercise homeland security. Sometimes we call it homeland insecurity. We're trying to do so many things, but we're so vulnerable. You know, we hear about the possibility of electromagnetic attacks where I can just wipe out our communication systems and our electrical systems. And many of our enemies have nuclear weapons. And we're vulnerable in so many ways. And so in spite of how bad things are, I just realize that things could be a lot worse. But God is going to let more and more bad things happen, of course, because of the fact that the Israelite people, who should know better, who should have the Judeo-Christian values and should be Bible-based Christians, are not showing respect for the Bible or even God. When Gary Petty was in town and came to a conference here, he gave a sermon there in McKinney, and he explained that most people who call themselves Christians don't base any of their beliefs on the Bible. They think that if you just have love in your heart, you feel like you love God and you love people, that's all it means. That's all it takes to be a Christian. You can call yourself a Christian if you feel you have love, whether you pay any attention to the Bible or not. And so it's really shocking, and it's hard to know how to preach the gospel to those people and reach them and wake them up to realize they've got to look to the Bible as a source of their beliefs and their practices and way of life and so forth. I just want to remind you of various specific things in the Bible about how God has protected his people. Daniel was put in a den of hungry lions, and amazingly, God protected him. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were put in a fiery furnace and did not get burned. After the first three plagues on Egypt, God protected the Israelites from all the rest of the plagues. He parted the Red Sea for them. He gave them a cloud by day for 40 years to protect them from the sun. He provided manna every day to feed them. He gave many, many victories in battle. And it's always amazed me when I read that some battles, the Israelites lost no soldiers, none at all. And I think, I would love to see a movie of that. I mean, it's hard to envision people out there with swords and spears and so forth fighting, and nobody even accidentally gets killed. on our side. And yet sometimes the entire other army gets wiped out. But that's hard to imagine too. But then to do that without having any casualties of your own, it is it's really mind-boggling. I mean, it's some of the miracles that God has performed are just really hard to imagine. Sometimes God protects people by telling them to flee and by helping them to get to a safe place. He did that with Noah and his family. He did that with Lot and his family. He did that with Jacob and his family by arranging them to be able to escape Egypt. He did that with Joseph and Mary and their son Jesus by telling them to go to Egypt to be safe for a while. And Revelation 12 speaks of the woman, the church, being taken into the wilderness to a place for protection. And it's hard to imagine how that's going to take place. It's really hard for me to imagine. You know, the prophecy says there in one version of the Olivet prophecy says, let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Well, why would there be any more than a handful of people in Judea? And then if God is, I do think God's working with many people in other churches of God besides the United Church of God. And yet if you have a lot of people from, let's say, 30, 40, 50 different churches of God all come to one place, it's like, how's that going to work? Who's going to be in charge? So because so many people are concerned about their leaders being the best leaders and all that. So we're going to really see great miracles in the future. We don't know how God's going to do it, many things, but it's going to be amazing to see. You know, of course, the most dramatic chapter in the Bible about protection is Psalm 91. And that's always inspiring and encouraging to read and review. And then showing that no matter what's happening around you, if God wants to protect you, he can certainly do it. Many people claim to be followers of Jesus, but I gave a sermon, I think it was a couple of years ago, about being a real follower, not a fan. That was after I read this book that was out on the market called Not a Fan, where the author was correctly pointing out that the many people who call themselves followers of Jesus Christ, they're fans of Jesus Christ, kind of like he's a hero or something, but they don't really follow him. They don't do what he says. They may think they believe in Jesus, but they don't believe what he says. They don't. At least they don't obey it. The Bible promises both protection and promises hardship and persecution. You know, Jesus said to enter by the narrow gate. There's the way to eternal life is difficult and narrow, and few go in there. And the way that leads to destruction is broad and easier in many ways. And so we are protected from many things, but actually as we become more well-known, we expect to get more and more persecution. And that's something we have to be prepared for. It is interesting that we have protection and added trials at the same time, and we need to be willing, whatever is God's will at the time, whether it's time for us to go through a deliverance and a blessing and a comfort, and or whether it's time for us to go through a trial. But God knows what is best at the time. We've got to keep praying, but always be adding, of course, nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. It's inspiring that and interesting that perhaps the most common command from God in the Bible is do not fear. Now, there's different kinds of fear. In fact, the best antidote for fear of man is to fear God. To have the kind of fear that we should have for God. Then, it's like, if God be for us, who can be against us? We may need to maintain that fear and reverence and closeness with God, and then we will not be living in terror and worry. I think I said on Trumpets that it seems a little amusing to me that toward the end of Matthew 6, where he's talking about the trust in God, and that it says, don't worry about tomorrow. So in a sense, it's okay to worry about today because we need to focus on what you need to do today. But you know, don't live in dread and fear and worry about the future. And this is a very encouraging time of year, of course. And as we approach the Day of Atonement, which and the Feast of Tabernacles and the Great Day, we look forward to Satan being bound. We look forward to Jesus Christ ruling over the earth and establishing a paradise and freedom and blessings and prosperity and health and joy for the world. And then we look forward to the eighth day, the last great day, and to know that God really does love everybody. He really does want to save everybody. He definitely is planning to give every single human being that has ever lived since Adam and Eve the opportunity to learn the truth of the Bible and then to live by it and to have the opportunity then to have eternal life. And surely, most people will gladly accept that offer and not rebel. I'm hoping that very few will end up being thrown into the lake of fire because given a clear opportunity to live by the Bible and to see Jesus Christ in person and to know what has happened, to know that the Bible is proven to be true, that most will accept that. To me, the most inspiring truth that I've ever learned from the Bible, which I learned very quickly after starting to attend church services, is about the second resurrection. It is so inspiring to me to know how much God loves everybody and has a plan where he's going to give everybody that opportunity. You know, Bible prophecies tell us that the world conditions will get steadily more violent and dangerous as we approach the end of the age. And we will see worse things happen than what happened 20 years ago. And we'll certainly need to be close to God and relying upon God to protect us and provide for us more than ever. But God does not want us to live in fear. The most common command in the Old Testament and the New Testament is do not fear. And sometimes I feel like, well, that's easier said than done. But he tells us over and over again, don't live in fear. And he wants us to live fearless lives because we know the Lord is our shepherd. Of whom shall I be afraid? The Lord is my shepherd. And even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Romans 8:31 says, if God is before us, who can be against us? And so we must stay faithful and endure to the end. And I'm just going to close by reading some from Matthew 10. Matthew 10 is not the Olivet Prophecy, but it partly sounds like the Olivet Prophecy. But most of the chapter is telling us that there's going to be all kinds of persecution. So it's a very sobering chapter to read, to help us to be prepared for future trials and persecution. And then in verse 22, he says, and you will be hated for my name's sake, but he who endures to the end will be saved. Now, he said that again in the Olivet Prophecy, but this is a key principle that we must persevere. Endure and persevere, and then we will be saved. So then I just want to read what Jesus said is written here in verses 28 through 31. And do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul, meaning permanent life, you know, your existence. But rather fear him who's able to destroy both soul and body in Gehenna. So you see, there's the right kind of fear. If we have the right fear of God, then we're not going to fear even death. Verse 29, are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin, and not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will? But the very hairs of your hair are numbered. Do not fear, therefore. You are of more value than many sparrows. I've heard people in the church countless times say, well, I don't know why God called me. What do I have to offer? Well, God is looking to your potential, your future. He's going to make each one of us great. You know, to think of being a teacher and a ruler, assisting Jesus Christ, and then living forever in God's family, God has big plans for us. So we just need to hang in there and not live in fear.